This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by GiftTrek.net. You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 55, Poor Dumb Picard. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including international theatrical screenings for the TNG Blu-ray release, a new line of women's Star Trek apparel from Ashley Eckstein and her universe, our first impressions of IDW's take on Return of the Archons, and of course, some movie news and rumors. Then in the feature, we're joined by Brian Finifter and Charlene Schmidt to take a walk down memory lane as we follow young, reckless Picard around in Tapestry. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I'm doing great. I've actually spent all weekend in filmmaker mode. And I've actually got a new screenplay. You know, they say, write what you know. So my new script is actually about a pair of podcasters who, it turns out, can't stand each other.
Really? And what's the... Is this called Bosom Buddies, by any chance?
Crying out loud. I'm happy. I'm perfectly happy. I am having a wonderful time. Wish I was here.
Stop bringing up... Bosom Buddies. No, it's your show. It's your show. You can do, you know, whatever you like. You can bring up Bosom Buddies or what's that other show? Oh, Full House. You keep bringing up Full House. Any whatever, Chris. It's fine. It's fine.
You'd prefer that we just talk about Battlestar Galactica all the time, right?
Yes, I would.
So say we all.
All right. So how is the film coming along there, Greg?
All the projects. I have like 5-6 projects up in the air right now. They are moving towards completion. It's very exciting. But it takes up my entire weekend. I feel like I just got off work on Friday, and here we are, Sunday evening, doing the podcast. It's Canada Day. It's crazy. I don't know what's going on anymore.
Well, we didn't set up any special promotions for Canada Day on the show today, did we?
No, we didn't. I really regret it. I'm drinking Heineken, you know, by the liter. I think that's what they do. But that's pretty much all I'm doing for Canada Day this year.
Why do they drink Heineken for Canada Day?
Canadians love Heineken. I can't explain it. Don't ask me to explain Canadians.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about Kirk at some point, I'm sure, today. Yeah. And of course, William Shatner
exactly.
is Canadian, so that'll have us covered.
There you go. Exactly. That's
at any rate.
Spot on.
Well, I know how you feel about time. Mm. It's always a rush. I can't believe we're recording another show already. It feels like we just recorded last week's show. And then I went to bed, and now we're doing another show, but
here we
are.
The
week has flown by. Last night we had a birthday party for my daughter, and she turned 8, and she requested hand-rolled sushi, which I imagine is probably not a common birthday request in America.
Not really,
but,
no.
But to give you the Star Trek influence, I'm sitting there at the table, and I'm looking at the octopus, and I was thinking, you know, maybe we should have dyed the octopus purple, but... So I think Star Trek has had a little bit too much influence on the way I see the world.
It probably has. That's, wow, dyeing the octopus purple.
So I just pretended that the sake that I was drinking was Romulan ale and everything was okay.
Yes.
All right. So at any rate, Greg, let's jump in. We have several things before we get into news today. One thing we have are iTunes reviews. And I really love how one person found our show. And the first one we have up is from someone named Cerebral Paladin, which and it sounds like someone from Dungeons and Dragons or something, I guess. I don't know. But they're very intelligent, clearly. They could be Talosian.
Right.
A paladin with a very large head. But
at least it's not a paladin cerebrum. That'd be quite strange. You know, just gray matter with a helmet on.
Oh, yeah. I bet maybe the Enterprise will encounter those during a TOS season 4.
It's entirely possible at this point.
All right. But the Cerebral Paladin here just says, great and entertaining way to keep up with the latest and greatest in the Star Trek world. All right. So straight to the point, 5-star review that says, it's great. So thank you, Mr. Paladin, your review there and your wisdom. And the second review we received is from someone who personally, now, if I were at Destination Star Trek London and this person walked into that special event that they're having in the ballroom, mm-hmm. I might get a little nervous because their name is Trigger Happy Klingon. But Trigger Happy Klingon gave us a 5-star review and says, a great Star Trek podcast. And they say, I've been a listener of Dork Trek for a while now, and I've heard them talking about the Ready Room several times. I decided to check it out, and it was the best choice I've made in podcast listening in a long time. I love the in-depth discussions of Trek news and rumors. I also enjoy hearing what the hosts and guests think of the various episodes and movies they review during the feature. I've listened to every episode they have put out in the last week alone, and I'm glad I did. They introduced me to 5-Year Mission, and while I am not a huge fan of TOS, 5-Year Mission's take on the TOS episodes is great. I'm listening to year 2 now. Keep up the great work. So thank you, Trigger Happy Klingon. And Greg, I was just imagining, now we've done 54 episodes of The Ready Room, and they average 2 hours apiece. That's a lot of that, listening to us for someone to do.
It really is. I wonder if he has one of those jobs where he doesn't need his ears for anything else, and he can just listen to the show all day, because that's the only way I could possibly imagine getting through that much as in a way podcast in just a week.
And I might say that he also doesn't need his sanity or brain cells, because if listening to us for that long and our continuous silliness. And,
yeah, with our brand of humor, I can't imagine that just seeping in and taking over.
Yeah, that would be... it'd be kind of tough. You remember Lieutenant Commander Zell from Dork Trek said that she puts on Ready Room episodes at night as she dozes off. And and I thought that was a little, I couldn't imagine someone listening to us as they doze off. But listening, especially when the barrel roll kicks in. But listening to every one of our shows in 1 week, that is, I think that Trigger Happy Klingon deserves some kind of award for that. Some kind of medal.
Yeah,
Medal of Valor.
Yeah, definitely. I think Admiral Adama would agree.
So say we all.
I think so. All right. All right. So those are our iTunes reviews. So anyone else, if you like the show, please drop by iTunes. Just look us up, The Ready Room, and leave us a rating and leave us a review. It helps other people find the show. It helps us hopefully rise up through the mysterious system that Apple has of how they list podcasts, of which I have no clue, because all of the top-ranked Star Trek podcasts, if you search Star Trek, are shows that haven't had a new episode in like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
But they're listed ahead of all of the other shows that we do and all the other great podcasts that are out there right now. They're listed ahead of everybody for some reason. I don't know how Apple decides who gets listed first, but I have heard that reviews and ratings and what's being downloaded at the moment counts somehow.
Right.
So
yeah, and I want to mention I want to mention too that there's the new podcast app for iOS. So if you've got an iPhone or an iPad, go ahead and download the podcast app and you can subscribe to us right there in the app, and you don't even need to sync with iTunes. Every time we release, it'll be automatically downloaded. And it's even finally got the album artwork right there on the iPad, which has been missing. I don't know, Chris, if you use your iPhone or your iPad for podcasting, but the iPad has been pretty atrocious as far as podcast support since the beginning, really.
Yeah. I use both. I use my iPhone more often than my iPad for listening to podcasts. But yeah, the music app on the iPad is terrible. Especially when it comes to podcasts. However, this new app, Podcasts, is fantastic. So definitely go download. It's called Podcasts. It's not a Microsoft product. It's not called Podcast Application for Streaming Audio or something like that.
Right.
It's just called Podcasts. And
that's right.
It is really great. And I do love the fact that you can subscribe through the app. I've gone through to all the podcasts I listen to and I've subscribed.
Yep.
And they now magically appear And it's fantastic.
Yeah, and Chris, I'm really impressed that you've taken the time to transfer all of our old shows onto magnetic tape so that it can run through that magnetic tape player that's in my iOS devices now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it just felt like a no-brainer. It's something I really had to do it, yeah. You know. I am someone who grew up with saving computer data on cassette tapes and listening to 8 tracks in the car. So when I saw the chance to put all of our shows on tape, I had to do it. And, you know, people wonder, why hasn't there been a new Trek trivia for a while, for example, on the site? Well, it's because I've been putting all the Ready Room episodes on magnetic tape.
That would explain it.
You know, for safekeeping. All right, Greg. Well, let's jump into some real news this week. And the first one we have up, I think, is very exciting for our international fans, at least in English-speaking countries. Mm-hmm. There are some TNG in-theater events set now for Australia and Canada.
Yeah, so it's not just people in the U.S., but people outside can get that full screen, that big screen TNG experience with a 7.1 surround sound and all of that. It's very exciting. I'd heard rumors of there being something in Canada, but now, I mean, Australia too. Hopefully they'll expand this to England as well in the next next few weeks.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm sure they could show them at the destination Star Trek London, but hopefully they'll do it closer to the DVD release. Mm-hmm. I think these are lined up in Australia and Canada to coincide with the release of the season one set as it is in the US.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And it's coming up. I mean, we're looking at just 3 weeks away on the 23rd. So there's going to be the showings on the 23rd, and I believe the Blu-ray is released on the 24th. And so that's really exciting. I bought my ticket, you know, a month ago, but I'm getting really excited to see that. And now if you're in Australia or Canada, now do we know exactly where? I mean, are we talking East Coast, West Coast, Melbourne? What cities exactly? Do we have a listing of all that?
Well, there is a little bit of information, Greg. Now, looking at the Canadian information, I don't see any clear listings of which cities are going to be showing the episodes. There is a search field for city, however. This is at cineplex.com, cineplex.com. And I suppose if you actually search for a city, maybe then you can find which local theaters are showing it and what the times are like.
Yeah.
You know, so for Australia, on the other hand, there is some information, and it looks like it's going to be just all over the country. There's lots of stuff going on there. And so we'll put links to these in the show notes. The Australian site is Sharmil Films. Mm-hmm. That's Sharmill films.com.au. And you can get information there as well and find out when it's coming near you. So it's going to be July 26th. For Australia, and it's going to be July 23rd for Canada.
Yes, and of course, we know in the States, we know TNG as Star Trek: The Next Generation, but of course that wasn't going to work overseas. Chris, are you familiar with the different titles that TNG has been given in when it's been taken to other countries?
No, why don't you tell me some of those?
Well, I mean, in Australia, of course, it's the G'day Generation. Up in Canada, it's, you know, the Next Generation A, typically what they go with there. But you know, and when they show it basically in the very core of London, it's pretty much Star Trek, the Next Generation. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they shift things subtly depending on where they take the show. Just so, you know, you don't want to confuse people, you know, instead of Picard drinking tea Earl Grey hot, It's a Heineken, you know, when you're in Canada. Don't ask me to explain why they drink so much Heineken. They just do, and so Picard does. And it's that sort of thing that makes, you know, TNG universal.
Yeah, I like the Australian releases of The Next Generation, where he goes up in his quarters and he goes to the replicator and he says, sandwich, Vegemite, cold.
Exactly. And then there's that scene where Riker's trying to cook and he just keeps throwing more shrimps on the Barbie.
Yeah, I know. It's one of the great things about Star Trek is the way they are able to customize it to each culture in which it is shown. Mm-hmm. It makes it connect a lot better.
Yeah.
And that's why it's been, you know, Next Generation's been around for 25 years.
Yeah.
If they they didn't do that, you know, maybe it just wouldn't be nearly as popular as it is.
Yeah, definitely. And it's fun sometimes, you know, when they bring a little bit of that culture from other countries in too, like when Riker and his father do that, you know, traditional Japanese ambojitsu match.
Where they yell, Yoroshi gasik bashibash!
Which means something in Japanese, from what I understand.
Apparently, not the Japanese that I speak, but
futuristic Japanese,
maybe space Japanese. Maybe that means something. I don't know. All right. Well, we'll put some links to all this information about the movie showings in Australia and Canada on the show notes page for this episode, so you can jump over. Okay, Greg. So now I know you did finish your Empress Hoshi mm-hmm. doll, and you need to dress the Empress Hoshi doll sometimes in not her, I know it's hard, but not her evil yeah. Empress clothing. But sometimes, you know, like if you're having company over, you might want to just like throw a t-shirt on her or something.
You got to keep Empress Hoshi casual.
That's right. And so to do that, what you need are some Star Trek themed women's clothes that, you know, are designed really just for women, by women, for women. And Ashley Eckstein, who people know as playing the voice of Ahsoka Tano on the Star Wars Clone Wars series, mm-hmm. Has a company called Her Universe. And Dan Madsen, who is the founder of the Star Trek fan club, who you may remember was on MatterStream with me mm-hmm. quite a while back, he's actually been working with Ashley and her company on this apparel. And they've now released the Star Trek themed apparel to go along with their Doctor Who and Battlestar Galactica and Star Wars lines.
That's really cool. And I was looking over what they've done. They've got some really cool stuff here. I mean, just like, I mean, the main picture, they show a TOS looking shirt like Uhura would have worn, but it's, you know, it's not really a uniform. It's just a casual shirt you can wear, you know, probably not at your job or anything, but if you're going to a convention, this would be great. But then other stuff.
If you worked at my company, you could wear it. I'd be okay.
Okay,
with
well,
it.
There you go. If you're working for Chris, go ahead and wear your her outfit. You know how he likes it. You got other things like an iGrok Spock shirt. I've got a crush on Crusher. I feel like they really did a lot of thinking on, you know, how to market to Star Trek fans and Star Trek women fans as well.
Yeah, and another important thing is that, you know, the clothing is cut for women. Mm-hmm. You know, so much of the Star Trek merchandise, it's unisex yeah. or it's made with men in mind. And so, you know, if women wear it, that's just throwing on a giant t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas the stuff is actually designed for women, cut for women, and just really nice looking designs they've come up with. And yeah, if you're a female fan and you're looking for some Star Trek clothes, go over and check it out at heruniverse.com. And it's all of officially licensed stuff and just great.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm looking forward to ordering some of this stuff and forcing it on my non-Trekkie friends. Like, it's free clothes. You ought to just wear it. We'll see how that goes over.
Yeah, and if you happen to be at San Diego Comic-Con, which is just coming up now in a few weeks, they're going to have a booth there, and they'll have some of the merchandise there. And I think San Diego Comic-Con is actually going to be the official premiere of the Her Universe Star Trek line. So you could check that out. All right, Greg, well, what else do we have up in news today?
Well, next, I believe we should talk a little bit. Now, we want to stay away from spoilers, but we should talk about the two-part comic series that we've just gotten to, the second part. So it's Return of the Archons is what they're doing with the Star Trek ongoing. I believe it's issue 10 that just came out this week. Is that right?
Yeah, 10 just came out this week. So this story is issue 9 and 10 together. Gives you the two-parter. And I was really impressed. You know, I know when we talked about the last issue mm-hmm. that came out, we felt like they had been maybe rushing things a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it was delayed, and then the artwork was just not quite up to the same level as the past issues. But I have to say that I was really impressed with Return of the Archons here.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I mean, just to look at. I don't particularly remember the original episode. I think we're going to have to do Archons in an upcoming TOS feature. But the story in the comic itself was interesting. It was keeping me engaged and involved. And especially, again, no spoilers, but where it gets to at the end was fascinating. Really, really cool. And like I said, it kept me engaged. So if you haven't picked these up, I definitely really recommend either go to your comic book shop, pick up 9 and 10, or just download the Star Trek Comics app that's at least available for iOS. And you can buy them. I think it's like $3.99 a comic. And it's absolutely worth it.
$3.99 for digital.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was great. And if you've been staying away from the series, maybe if you read the first couple of issues that came out, where they like just basically they just redid the original story with the new Abramsverse cast, come back and read it, because they really go in their own direction with this. And I really think that this story is far more interesting than the original Return of the Archons. And the other thing, Greg, you know, in some of the ones they've done, I have talked about how I felt like they couldn't really delve into the story because the comic format didn't give them enough time. This one, on the other hand, I felt like not only could this have been a full episode, but I actually think there's enough material in here that they could make a movie out of this two-part comic, and you wouldn't feel like they were padding it anywhere. That it could really make a great movie. So
yeah, I think that's entirely possible. It's not just the original series episode, only now Uhura saves the day. It's a real reimagining, and it's big in scale and really cool. So yeah, I mean, definitely check it out. The one thing that was a little odd, I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, but when they show the USS Archon, it looks like the NX-01 Enterprise with little JJ nacelles on it.
It does, yeah. But I thought that was cool, because I thought that, because that ship is supposed to be from the 22nd
That's
century.
True.
The Archon. It's not a Kirk era ship. Mm. And so I thought it was kind of cool that they tied it in. It doesn't look exactly like the NX-01. It looks like an evolution between the NX-01 and the Constitution class. Mm. It's like it's kind of heading away from the NX-01 design.
That makes sense.
Maybe it's just a few years down the road.
It looks a bit, I mean, it looks like it could be a refit of the NX-01 after, I mean, several years. Like, they update the nacelles, and that's the main bit. I guess there's other little things that change.
But it does have that flat body, the saucer, the way that the nacelles are attached. Right. It's all like the NX-01. Yeah. So I thought it was kind of cool that they tie that in. You know, they're trying to tie the past timeline, the past of the alternate timeline in, so that everything makes sense.
Yeah, and you start to get this idea. You start to get this idea of maybe in the 22nd century, it's all saucer section, and then in the 23rd, they put the engineering onto that secondary hull, and then as we get into the 24th century, it's all just one big ship, and there's people living on both sections. And that's an evolution of Starfleet design, and that's really interesting to see some of those little holes filled in.
It also shows that the timeline was the same until Nero made his incursion.
Right.
So the designs that they would have had for the ships and all would have been the same in both timelines, more or less.
I would have really hated it had it been a full-on JJ ship of some sort. Because, I mean, there's a distinct difference between the JJ Enterprise and the original one. So to see something sort of in the middle, that really does work for me.
Yeah, it really does. So this is a great comic. Mm-hmm. So everyone go check it out. Return of the Archons, that's Star Trek Ongoing number 9 and number 10. And we'll do Return of the Archons for one of our TOS shows coming up.
Yeah.
And
we kind of have to. It is the will of Landru.
It is. I mean, and you can't resist Landru.
Well, so if you've been reading the comic, you may have also been reading the IDW Assimilation Squared, where it's got Doctor Who as well as the Cybermen and the Borg. And if you're like me, that's got me thinking all sorts about the Borg recently. And so I went on our sponsor site, actually, gifttrek.net, to see what do they have in terms of what I can wear on me that says, I like the Borg. I'm a fan. I want to be assimilated. I want to assimilate. And they've got a whole bunch of stuff, the Borg logo, assimilate, all sorts of great stuff that I can show off my Borg allegiance. What have you been seeing, Chris?
Well, there is the Star Trek Borg head t-shirt, which is it's kind of interesting in the way that the Borg is maybe looking at the person next to you. So I think it would be a really fun thing to wear to a convention or a party, and and let the other person know that you are watching them and that they may be assimilated.
Definitely. But,
the other question I had for you, Greg, looking at gifttrek.net is, today in the feature, we're going to talk about tapestry, and I think it's very important for you to go ahead and think in advance, what would you wear to the afterlife?
Mm.
And if you were going to find yourself in the afterlife with Q, I think it would be a good idea, you know, get things started off on the right foot with Q by wearing some kind of Q apparel.
That's very good. And I've got one right here. It's WWQD. What would Q do?
What would Q do? That's a question I ask myself every day.
Pretty much every day. I mean, sure, it's, you know, zap yourself into a bed with Picard. But, you know, sometimes that's not the worst idea. But yeah, I mean, it's a good starting point.
Well, I think I'm going to have to order this one right now because I need to know every day what Q would do in my daily life. All right. So these are some things that you can grab there at gifttrek.net. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, is there anything else that you think you might need to take with you to the afterlife there, Greg?
Well, of course, you've got a Shut Up, Wesley t-shirt for just in case you run into him while you're there.
You should always be prepared. because, I mean, after he became a traveler, you never know. Mm. He might show up in the so-called afterlife, yes, in which Q apparently runs things. Yeah, so whatever you need to get ready for your trip there with Q, you can find it over at gifttrek.net. So just hop over, and that's not.com. We don't know who those guys are.
Right.
They may be Orions. I don't know who they are, but make sure you go over to gifttrek.net, N-E-T, and when you check out, you can use code TREKFM10 to get 10% off your purchase. And we thank gifttrek.net for their support. You are fighting to the blood boys, the atomic burn. You are fighting, so bring something we can burn. You are fighting, you might want to bring some extra towels, just in case someone happens to get disemboweled. Blood boys, the atomic burn. Blood boys, the atomic burn. All right, Greg. Well, apparently, as we move into movie news and rumors, I was a little concerned this week as Chris Pine was talking about Benedict Cumberbatch having blood dripping from his fangs. Did I read that correctly? What was that all about?
That's the quote. You know, he's talking about Benedict Cumberbatch. He says he's a lovely guy, just super smart. You want to see something firing in his brain so he's not just a blood dripping from the fangs bad guy. So obviously, okay, he's smart. He's intelligent. He's, you know, brilliant, but he also has blood dripping from his jaws. I mean, that's what I'm getting from that quote. And so I'm imagining, is he some sort of werewolf? Is he a salt vampire? I don't know where they're going with it at this point.
I don't know. Now, did you add bloody to your Star Trek 2013 villain whiteboard diagram
I did.
In the corner there?
Blood and fangs confirmed. So I've got those up on the board next to all the other adjectives we've gotten for him. So yeah, I don't know. That's quite fascinating. I think they're trying to say he's going to be, as they've been saying for weeks, a more cerebral, you know, maybe he's a cerebral paladin. Maybe that's where our fan got his name from. Maybe Benedict Cumberbatch plays a cerebral paladin in the movie.
Oh, so or maybe you're saying that the villain from the next Star Trek movie actually left a review of the Ready Room on iTunes.
That's very possible too. I mean, that's quite a mind game.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit of like a way of passing us some exclusive information that,
right? I mean,
you know, leaking it out, you know, in a very tricky and cerebral way.
I mean, we don't get many Trek FM exclusives, but that may be one we've got right here. So very glad to have that. I don't know. There have been some quotes coming out recently. I don't know quite what to go for. Chris Pine had I don't remember which show he was on, but he talked about being chased after by a naked fan at a gay pride parade. And I think he wasn't talking about the Star Trek film. I think this had actually happened. I think, though, don't quote me on that. All sorts of things, though, are firing my brain as I'm trying to figure out what's going on in this film, because it's very, there's a lot of information. It's very confusing.
Maybe so. Yeah, I don't know. I keep going back to that image of Spock descending into a volcano, what it looked like. And I wonder if it's not blood dripping from the fangs, but maybe it's hot lava. And maybe as Enterprise redesigned the Gorn to be a very scary reptilian creature, maybe they're going to redesign the Horda to be a little bit more humanoid in form and have hot lava dripping from its fangs.
That's okay. So that's entirely possible. Now, maybe that's where Robert Picardo is thinking about. He might be in the next film. Bones actually needs some extra help, so he pulls in, you know, Dr. Zimmerman's great great grandfather, who comes and assists them as they are trying to examine the Horda. This is entirely possible.
It's possible, yes, because at least he could touch the Horda,
right?
Being a hologram.
Oh,
this story.
Zimmerman's great grandfather was a hologram. I thought. Okay, all right, yes. I'll go with that.
You didn't know? Well, you didn't know. Anything's possible. Nothing is impossible,
right?
Which is what Robert Picardo says here.
Exactly.
This story I thought was really odd because the quote from Robert Picardo is that, well, it's always possible that they'll use one of us.
Right.
Talking about him or other people from other, you know, Star Trek movies, series. And he says, I've met with JJ. He was very kind and complimentary to me. And I know he watched the show because he's a fan of Star Trek. Nothing is impossible.
Right.
Now, this story just came out, but yet they finished filming the movie.
Yeah.
I know they can go back and film a scene here and there or something, but they finished filming the movie. What do you mean? Maybe they will use one of us. Did they shoot footage with?
He must mean down the road. And I, you know, honestly,
no. But he says the next movie.
Yeah, I don't know. But then this is one of the cases where it's an interview question that they ask everyone. Oh, are you going to be in the next film? Because they're looking for that headline. And if anyone says, I met JJ, they immediately interpret that as, you know, I met with him. They're looking at writing him into the script and all of that. But no, JJ's met with a lot of people. You know, when you're JJ Abrams, you're going to meet Robert Picardo eventually. So I don't think he was saying anything remotely like, I'm going to be, I might be, they're considering me.
Yeah, I guess so. It's like, so are you going to be in the next JJ movie? I don't know. I know he's a Star Trek fan, and I was shopping down at Target the other day, and he walked by me in the toothpaste section, and he said hi, and I said hi, and then I went and I checked out, and I went home, and I didn't think anything else of it. And then the reports would be that...
Garrett Wang to appear in next Star Trek film.
That's right. In the big toothbrushing scene where we find out that they do still brush their teeth in the future. You know, we've never really found out what they do with their teeth in the future, have we?
Well, there's the sonic toothbrushes and the sonic toothpaste and the sonic water. It's pretty much the same thing, only with sonic-ness, sonic things.
Yeah.
Sonic floss is really bizarre.
It is, yeah. I get the feeling that Star Trek is sponsored by Sonic. You know, I always expect to see Guinan come roller skating out from behind the bar and tend forward to deliver some hot dogs.
That does bring a whole new meaning to Sonic Shower. I can imagine they'd get a lot of business with Roxanne Dawson coming in at the end of a long day.
They do. Now you get in the shower and then these waitresses, they roller skate in and they wash you off and then they dry you off with the sonic towels, nice. And then they roller skate out of your quarters. And
that'd be pretty fantastic. All right. So, what else do we have in the movie rumors and news area today?
We just have a couple of quick little things. Kurtzman and Pine apparently have both said that the crew is still on a journey to becoming the TOS crew. So,
right.
I guess this goes back to the whole, they're kind of finding their way. Kurtzman says that just because Kirk's in the chair and, you know, all the crew is on the bridge, it doesn't mean that they're the crew that you remember from the original series.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense. It's good that they're keeping in mind arcs for these characters. I believe it may have been this week or last week, though, we were talking about, you and I, off the air. I guess it might have been on the very other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
That Damon Lindelof has this idea that there's these questions, and that questions are best left unanswered. And I think I speculated that we might even get to the end of Star Trek 2 to boldly go and still not know who Cumberbatch was playing in the first place.
Oh, yeah, you told me that. You leave the theater and you're still like, so who was he playing?
Was he Harry Mudd? Was that Q? Was he playing a Borg? I really just couldn't make sense of it. But this quote brought me a little bit back to saying, okay, all right. They're not building Star Trek up to be this big mystery. They're building it to have character arcs. They're building it to be about the characters. And that's good. Because Star Trek, I don't think it's ever been about the mystery. I can think of maybe a couple mysteries here or there. Sometimes there's a plot twist, but there's never really an ongoing mystery element. I don't think that's what Star Trek is about.
Not really, you know, other than why do so many people die on the Enterprise D after they go to sickbay?
Right. Why indeed?
The lingering mystery of where Dr. Crusher actually got her credentials. No. Okay, I'm kidding, all you Crusher fans out there. But yeah, it's not like that. It's not going to be like Lost, where you get to the end of Lost and you're still kind of like, so what was going on again?
Right.
What was that? It's not going to be like that.
Yeah, but that's good.
Yeah, I think it'd be good. So I guess the last little thing we'll touch on before we head into the feature today is just something that Noel Clark has said, which is that Star Trek, the sequel, does have a title, but he can't tell you what it is. And of course, this has sparked all kinds of speculation about what the title might be. And of course, you have your favorite, which we did discuss, I believe, last time.
We did, yes. And I just brought it up recently, Star Trek To Boldly Go. I'm standing by that until proven otherwise. But I believe we got a couple, at least, title suggestions from out there in Twitterland.
We did. Last time we asked our listeners to send us their title suggestions. We got a few from David Kramlich. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Just call him Lord Hot Dog. Lord Hot Dog. Just make sure you pronounce that second G.
Okay. Lord Hot Dog. Is that right?
I think that's right.
Okay. All right. Make sure I get that in there. Yeah. Or maybe it's like a Klingon snack food. Lord Hot Dog.
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 Can I get some fresh
hot
dog?
Hot dog. Did Riker eat hot dogs when he was serving as first officer aboard the Klingon ship?
I believe he did, yes. That explains that. So what were some of the titles that Lord Hot Dog brought to us?
He suggested, the first one was Star Trek 2, Con, Here's My Number, Call Me Maybe. Although he added to this the hashtag, sorry, I'm late. To that one.
Okay, I don't know if that was a hashtag to us or to Khan. Call me maybe. Okay.
Maybe it's to Khan, you know, how Kirk just never went back to pick him up. So
that could very well be.
What was the next one that he had there?
Yeah, we've got Star Trek 2, Better Than Prometheus. Just be straightforward with it. You know, just put it out there. Great. Perfect.
And then the last one, I think, was perhaps inspired by our little rat hole that we went down last week. This is Star Trek II, Kirk and Spock's Bogus Journey.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Yes.
Dude.
Which would fit in well with some of the photos that we've seen. So,
it would for sure. I mean, I always love that moment in Space Movie 2009 where Nero, you know, Captain Pike does his whole, I am Captain Pike of the starship USS Enterprise. And Nero's just... Hello, Chris. But imagine if it'd be even better, Cumberbatch is on screen and he's just, dude.
He does have that kind of calm, yeah. Dude.
Voice. Yeah. Yeah, I think he could definitely pull that off. And then, you know, they go into their staff meeting and you know, Kirk says, Spock, what are we going to do? Dude.
Oh, that reminds me. I didn't mention when we mentioned the comic. Again, this is not really a spoiler, but I was really happy to see that there was a staff meeting in the comic.
Yes, I was too.
Didn't you love that?
Yes. I'm actually getting near the end of TNG. I don't know quite what I'm going to do. There's a lot fewer staff meetings. I I don't really know how they figure out what they're going to do without staff meetings. I mean, there's an occasional one, but they keep having these episodes where no one, and especially not the entire senior staff, gets together and discusses the issue of the day.
Yeah, I guess they just didn't have time. You know, they were too busy entertaining all their family members as right. they came aboard the ship. They didn't have time for staff meetings.
Yeah, well, I mean, when Barclay's great aunt comes to, you know, comes to the Enterprise with her little cute little dog. Oh, it's so adorable. And licks Geordi. I mean, yeah, I mean, the time for a staff meeting is just, can't get to it.
And that's also, as you told me, iMessage, the point at which I think they run out of family members.
Yes.
You know, they had a few more episodes to go in season 7. They ran out of family members. So that's when they brought Barclay's great aunt and also the ghost who used to sleep with Dr. Crusher's ancestors, who is kind of loosely a family member.
Right.
Onto the show. So thank goodness the series ended, or else who knows who would have been coming on.
Yeah, I mean, I saw some of those spec scripts for season 8. I mean, we start meeting Nurse Ogawa's, you know, ex-husband. That's not fun at all. They just really started scraping the bottom of the barrel.
They gave me a test to make me the best that I could be. They knew all along that there was something wrong with me. We picked out a spot and made a hole. Wire and glass and stainless steel. Now I can imagine how I feel. Got a new heart, I got a new heart, got a new heart, I got a new artificial heart. It's not a real heart, it's not a real heart, it's not a real heart, it is a real artificial heart. There's blood on the bed, but here in my head, I'm feeling fine.
Well, one of the favorite characters from The Next Generation is undoubtedly Q. And usually Q is in a humorous story, but in the 6th season, Q went back to maybe his original encounter at Farpoint form and got really serious with Picard, as Picard found himself in the afterlife in the episode Tapestry. And today we're going to talk about Tapestry. And to help us do this, we have friend of the show, Brian Finifter, back. Hello, Brian.
Hello, guys.
And welcome. We have our Voyager editor, Charlene Schmidt. Hello, Charlene.
Hey.
All right. And we were going to have Tristan on with us today. And I'm afraid Tristan may be out of commission due to some injury, and he may have gone to see Dr. Crusher. And therefore, couldn't be healed. And he's
going to die.
At any rate, we will go on with those of us who are still around and not yet in the afterlife and talk about Tapestry. And I guess that leads us to the first question. Greg, one of your questions is simply to ask, is this the afterlife?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably my main question, you know, of the show. When Picard, quote, dies on the table because Crusher's incompetent, and he goes to this big white room and he meets Q, I mean, what is going on here? I mean, what was your interpretation of the time, and what's your interpretation going back and watching the show?
I don't think it is the afterlife. I think it's just a pure construction of, I don't think it's the afterlife. I don't think it's an alternate timeline. I think it's just a pure construction of Q, who is omnipotent, and he's a walking magic being, and he can do whatever he wants. And so he does exactly what he needs to tell his own little story and creates a specific space to do that. I don't think there's probably any other alternate significant meaning besides this is just what he built for the purposes of this singular event.
Yeah, I agree. It's just Q doing what he's doing and basically taking our viewpoint of what the afterlife may be, or some conception of it anyway, and turning it into this.
It's interesting though, because it's a different kind of cue. I mean, Brian brought this up on the other side of the room. He's playing much more of the encounter at Farpoint cue than the Cupid cue. Much less mischievous and playful and kind of more serious and really trying to teach Picard a serious lesson about regret.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy this version of Q, and it's much more of a encounter at Farpoint slash all good things kind of Q. It still has that sense of humor and that kind of joking antagonism, but there's a deeper meaning to it, and it's less goofy than, say, Cupid or any one of his other appearances, especially in Voyager, where it's just much more goofy and I think more shallow than an episode like this.
Yeah, and this makes a lot more sense, to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in Encounter at Farpoint, he was kind of challenging Picard and challenging about whether humanity was worthy of, you know, exploring the galaxy. And then he did become like the jokester of Star Trek for a long time. One exception being Voyager's Death Wish, which was a very good Q episode.
Yeah,
they actually delved into an issue.
Yes.
So I do like this one too, where it really is... Q is really making Picard think about the decisions that he made in his life and how that plays into where he got in the future as captain. And I think not only that, but how he is an inspirational leader for his crew too. You know, all those decisions that he made in the past led to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I even think it'd be worth saying that the best Q episodes are the ones without Q in the title. You know, if we look at Tapestry, Death Wish, All Good Things and Encounter at Farpoint, that one's probably the weakest. But the Q parts of that episode are pretty strong. That's where they're really... Q's coming on to, at times, examine larger issues. And this is a really a big case of that, where it's Picard dealing with demons from his past and sort of trying to figure out how did Picard get to be this guy we know.
Yeah, he either comes on to explore deeper issues or he comes on to be comic relief.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's the deeper issue ones that really work for the character.
And I think actually the title aspect is a good litmus test, because it seems like when his name is in the title, it's more of a comic relief, and it's the episode and the title is designed for the commercial the week before, saying, hey, next week is going to be a Q episode, so make sure you tune in.
Yeah.
As opposed to when it's not necessarily in the title, and it feels like they're telling a story for a reason that requires Q in it to tell that story, but the purpose of it is not just to have Q around for ratings. That's what it seems like to me, anyway.
Yeah, and this is even, I think we talked about it's the same month that the DS9 Q episode aired.
Yeah,
which is
the DS9
totally
episode was the week before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. And it's, and that's the complete opposite. It's Q's in the story for absolutely no reason. Vosh is in the story for no reason. It's just this tacked together thing to get people to watch the show. Whereas this, I feel like they could show a promo for this episode that doesn't show Q at all, and you'd still have people tuning in, and then they'd see Q in it, and he even adds to the premise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the point of this episode is definitely not just to have Q around for the sake of having Q around. It has a thematic point all on its own. It just so happens that the best way to tell that story, you have the opportunity to have Q, but Q is not... And Q is not the end-all, be-all of the episode in the first place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm not solid on it being Q. I'm not saying it's absolutely not Q, but as you say, it could be any sort of omnipotent being that decided to teach Picard a lesson. Obviously, Q makes sense because he has this relationship with Picard. But yeah, it doesn't have to be. It's essentially a device to get us into... what's essentially Back to the Future. You know, what happens when you change the past? And you think something was a mistake in the past, but maybe it was actually the best thing that could have happened to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the law of unintended consequences. It's like, okay, you think that if you changed this one thing, then, you know, things would turn out this way. But in reality, you don't know because the universe doesn't work that way. So what happens when you do change that and you actually made a mistake?
And that leads me to one of my favorite parts of the episode, you know, when he does finally get through all of, you know, I'm going to sleep with my best friend, I'm going to stop the fight, and he's back on the Enterprise, and it's poor dumb Picard. And he's got his stupid teal uniform and his lieutenant junior grade, and he's, you know, treated by a lackey by everybody on the ship. And it's hilarious.
Yeah. Before we go into to young Picard and Picard's alternate timeline, though, I did want to say about the Q thing here that I do think it would work with any other omnipotent alien, but I do think that it's important that it's Q in the fact that Q and Picard had built this relationship, and although Q comes on in the humorous episodes and he's just like playing practical jokes on everybody and ha ha ha, Picard does say in All Good Things that Q has always taken an interest in me, and you know, I think he actually cares about, you know, what happens to me or what happens to us. I think that's the case here too, that I think that this is showing that Q actually does care about Picard in a way, because he wants to show Picard that the choices that you made were important and they made you who you are now, that the person who is bold and, you know, takes initiative and the person who is a leader. And in a way, I think he wants Picard to get into the fight. He wants Picard to make those choices. And I don't think he ever really intends to let Picard die. He just wants right. to show Picard that I don't want you to become this person. I don't want you to be PDP, as you said, Greg, in this case.
Right. I really like this version of Q where he's challenging Picard. I think this is Q at his best.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and not just Q, there's a lot, it comes up a lot in Star Trek, is to have these omnipotent energy being characters pop up and quote unquote test or challenge the main characters in various
or
ways.
Or impregnate.
Yeah, yeah. the one that makes him fight the Gorn and the Organians, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on. And I think that's a great aspect to Star Trek and to Q in particular, is this idea of, okay, there's, we're being kind of challenged and tested, but also helped along and kind of prodded to go in the right direction. And when Q doesn't fulfill that role, I think is when he's at his weakest. But he was clearly set up as that in the premiere and then in the finale as a full circle. And I think this is probably, other than those, maybe even including those, the greatest example of him as a character fulfilling that function of, okay, here's a guy
yeah.
pushing and prodding us just at the right moment, in the right way, at the right time, to move us along in some grander direction that, you know, only they know what the big picture is, but for that yeah. purpose.
Yeah. The only thing I do wish is that there had been a little bit more of an impetus for Q to do this. You know, something that happened in the previous episode, or that had been like an arc that had been building up, where Picard had been taking fewer chances, or, you know, that he'd been, you know, mulling his past in his brain a little bit more. We sort of have to take it as a given once the episode gets going,
yeah,
because it's TV and there's only time to jump into it.
Yeah.
So a lot of it has to be assumed. If this were, say, Enterprise, where they were trying to do these multi-episode arcs, it would have been cool to see Picard on a path that Q turns him away from. And then to see, you know, to see that continue in the future, because there's a few episodes later with Lessons, and I feel like Picard hasn't shown growth at that point. He tries out this relationship, but then it's difficult and he decides not to. And that's, you know, I feel like he learned a lesson here that he didn't take into the future.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he remembered what happened when he slept with Marta and how it all fell
true.
Apart. And so then he decided in Lessons, you know, not to make that mistake again.
Could very well be. Oh, have we talked yet about Picard as a young, I don't even know what to call him. He's Chris Pine in the Star Trek movie, and Picard in this episode seem very, very similar.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love the idea that Picard started out as Kirk and then...
Yeah.
changed and then basically grew up, where Kirk never really yeah. grew up. Picard at some point went, wow, I am a dumb stupid man, and turned into an adult, basically, where Kirk never did. I don't know if that was intentional, if that was a conscious kind of parallel that they were doing, but I love that quality.
Well, there's that scene where Lieutenant Commander Picard is sitting at the table and he's flying around a little Enterprise D pizza cutter, and he stops and he looks at it and he goes, you know, this is made for cutting pizza. It's not a toy. What am I doing with my life? That was the turning point.
You know, I think it all goes down to the hair you know, Picard wised up, he lost his hair. Kirk didn't there wise up go. In quite the same way as his hair.
I thought you were going to go with Picard lost his hair and dealt with it and allowed that to happen, whereas Shatner lost his hair and tried to cover it up for the rest of his life.
Oh,
sorry. I meant Kirk.
Well, I could have gone that route too. Yes, I suppose.
Right.
if James T. Kirk wore a toupee, then we also have to accept that Obi-Wan Kenobi wore a toupee. And I'm not sure. My brain, I don't know if it can accept all this stuff.
I also think there's a difference if we look at Picard and Sisko. So on Deep Space Nine, Sisko shaved the head and he became
different.
You know, bolder. Whereas here, Picard, it's more like shedding the hair, right? Because it's actually falling out.
Oh, man.
Again, that's different. Shedding is different from shaving.
Yeah.
Shedding is different from shaving. All right.
It is a little weird seeing full-grown Picard. I mean, it's cool seeing him in the Wrath of Khan uniform, but seeing him play these scenes with the younger actors, it's this weird disconnect in my brain, a whole episode. And I kind of wish they'd played it with that younger actor or, you know, Tom Hardy, whoever was available.
Tom Hardy in a horrible bald cap.
Oh, gosh. I was thinking, though, like when Picard is in the bar, what I'm thinking there is he's supposed to be young. And so these women he's going after are supposed to be the same age as him. But the actress was too old for the part because I'm sure they were concerned about having Patrick Stewart kissing a very young actress that would have been the Academy age. So there was also this kind of disconnect between that woman who was not supposed to be, you know, in her past.
Right.
But she was clearly much older than the character was.
Are you talking about Marta or the one at the bar? Because I always felt Marta.
Not Marta. Marta was fine. No, the woman at the bar.
I felt Marta looked a little older than the cadets should have.
Yeah.
And it might have been for the same
reason. She was supposed
to
be an ensign at that point. But
I mean,
yeah,
they're ensign at this point. I did feel like, they didn't play her as young as they could have been. I mean,
sure.
Who was it that Wesley kissed?
Ashley Judd.
We're talking about
Ashley
Leffler.
Judd. I mean, if they'd had,
how can you forget?
Yeah,
Leffler?
If they'd
you're
had
on the ready
Leffler
room
there,
and you forgot the name Leffler. And, come on,
I'm sorry, but if they'd had Leffler there with Picard, I mean, that would have been really, really creepy.
That would
so
have been.
I feel like they played Marta a little bit older than they could have.
Maybe she had been enlisted,
and you know, she went to the. That happens in the military sometimes. You enlist, but then you go to the academy, and you're what's called prior service. So maybe she was that.
That could be. Hmm.
Right. But that's not what Riker calls prior service. That's a different thing.
Oh, well, that's a completely different thing as far as Riker's concerned. Yes.
That's it. So what else do we think about young Picard?
Well, he certainly likes really, really stupid bar games.
Yes.
I mean, there's Dabo and then there's Dumb Jot. I mean, it's even a terrible name.
It is
anything with dumb in the title. Don't do it.
No, it's not
like
Dumb Jot. It's Dumb Jot.
Dumb Jot.
Dumb Jot. Human play Dumb Jot. Play Dumb Jot. Dumb Jot. Human Dumb Jot.
It's like this weird pool / croquet thing kind of going on.
It's like pinball, something. Yeah, there's that other one that has the weird little things in the middle of the billiards table, and I always forget what that one's called.
Yeah, but that's not bocce, is it? Because there's two bocce games.
Now, bocce is where you throw the ball. It's like a lawn game, I think.
Yeah, but isn't there another bocce too? Or am I thinking of the Star Wars language?
Well, yeah, there's a language that C-3PO speaks very well. It's like a second language to him.
That's right. But for me, this Dumb Jot, it's like, I think the origin of Dumb Jot was it was a game that was created by Kramerica. You know, Cosmo Kramer's company, where when they built, when George Costanza's dad put the pool table in the spare bedroom and there was no room for the pool sticks, I think Kramer decided to create these really, really, really short pool sticks so that they could play. And that eventually became Dumb Jot because it's hilarious, especially like this Nausicaan standing there with his little tiny pool stick.
Little tiny, like Harry Potter wand kind of a thing.
Yeah. So, yeah,
I don't know what the thinking was there. I mean, couldn't it just be pool? I mean, I know they're on a space station. I know they're playing against Nausicaans, but they play poker on the Enterprise. I think they could play pool on a space station.
Were they on a space station or they were at the Academy?
No, they're on station Bonestell.
Earhart.
Yeah.
Oh, Earhart. That's right. Yeah.
They talk about the fact that they're about to ship out, and it's kind of their last couple of days together before they all ship out on this transition station.
Yeah.
Because I was wondering why the Nausicaans were there in the first place. But anyway, this is what we call Dumb Jot, world's worst arcade game. This is what it comes down to.
Well, but yeah, so we've got this story that's actually kind of DS9 feeling, where they're sort of messing with the table and making them lose, and then they're fighting back, and then, oh, well, am I gonna cheat because he's cheating because I'm cheating, and all of this mess. But I mean, I guess it works in the episode itself, but all that I was watching that one element, I kept thinking, this feels like a DS9 episode.
It's certainly different from our run-of-the-mill TNG episodes, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure about DS9. It's just kind of its own thing unto itself, in my opinion. But yeah, it definitely has a different kind of a vibe. It's, I don't want to say it's more serious, because TNG certainly has its serious moments, but it's a very unusually serious, reflective type of episode, especially as far as Q is involved. Like we were talking about earlier, usually Q is around to be the jokester. In this case, he's being a very serious challenger to Picard, much as he was in Farpoint, et cetera, et cetera.
It's a very slow episode, as I was saying in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
It just kind of, there's a lot of very talky moments, especially even like Q and Picard in the bar, in the game room there, in his quarters. TNG has these slow-moving moments, but I feel like this one was particularly slow-moving, maybe because there were no other characters around for most of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's very Picard. It's concentrated. It's it's not nearly as much of an ensemble as they usually are.
Yeah, very so it's true. All it, yeah, and it's all like one-on-one or maybe one-on-one conversations, and all of them involve Picard. So it's Picard moving from scene to scene. And I think that's part of what makes it feel a little bit slower, because they don't have a B story to cut to, which I'd love to see, you know, Dr. Salar dealing with the ambulatory patients in, you know, Cargo Bay 2 or whatever. They never do cut to that.
Yeah, maybe, you know, Data's cat gets a preference for a different brand of cat food or something like that.
Feline Supplement 47.
Yeah,
it does feel very. It feels more like a play than they usually do. I mean, not in the sense that there are more limited locations. There probably are fewer than there normally are, but in the sense that the through line of the action is very, very straightforward. It is Picard's story, and you just stay with Picard the whole time, and it's because the interaction is so concentrated on him, and like you were saying, it's one on one most of the time, or one on one. And so I wonder if that affects the feeling of pace at all, that it's just kind of the drama is a little more theatrical than some other times.
And it's also not our ensemble. It's just Patrick Stewart. I mean, we've got Riker and Troyer there. And I think LeVar Burton has a voiceover, and of course Crusher shows up to try to kill Picard right at the beginning. But for the most part, it's Patrick Stewart with guest actors.
Yeah, most of the time. And, I mean, we get Riker and Troy for a little bit when we see alternate timeline Picard in 10 Forward, but it is very brief. Yeah. And we see Worf and Data on the bridge just for a moment during the alternate timeline as well.
And this isn't something Star Trek usually does. So that's another thing that sets this apart as a different kind of episode. I guess we have The Inner Light, but as far as an episode that really just concentrates on one character, especially on TNG, they just did not do this
not
very
too much.
Much.
We had Remember Me, which is only Dr. Crusher for almost the entire episode. And Picard's in there a bit. Well, everyone disappears throughout the episode, and then you get towards the end, and it's just Dr. Crusher. And everyone...
That's a good episode.
Yeah, it is a good episode. I actually like that episode a lot. Well, what do you think about young Picard, though? Is this anything like what you imagined Picard would be before this? Because prior to this, we only heard some stories about the Academy, but we never really saw Picard often as a young cadet, for sure, or an ensign.
Yeah, and this goes back to season 2, Samaritan Snare, where he tells Wesley about how he laughed when he was stabbed. And this is where we heard about the artificial heart in the first place. And yeah, that sort of gave us a sense of, maybe Picard was a different kind of guy, getting into fights with Nausicaans and laughing at death. He's not that sort of guy anymore. So no, this really does surprise me every time I watch it. Cause it's, I guess I assumed he was just sort of a nerd at the Academy and always, you know, making speeches. But that's somebody that he became somewhere along the line. And it, and that is cool hearing Q sort of note those places where he stepped up. He went on that away mission. He took command of the Stargazer, mm-hmm. and he became the Picard we have now. Whereas I feel like Kirk never really, as Brian said, never really had those moments. It was just a straight through line from the Academy into where he's at.
Right.
Especially Captain in 14. The new movie where he goes from the Academy to the captain in about 15 minutes. That's another podcast.
I like how between missions he has to do his homework because he's still in school. He's still in high school.
Right.
Yeah, he still has to call his mom I really like the idea that one of the reasons I like Picard so much as a character and why I prefer him as a character to Kirk is because he has those qualities that Kirk has. He can have that brashness and that risk taking and the ability to fight and all of that. But he is smarter and he has more depth about when to use it and when to pull it out, and a more maturity about, okay, this is the time to pull that out, or this is the time to go the other way, to be diplomatic, or to, you know, to solve the puzzle as opposed to fight the puzzle or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But he does have those qualities, but he has learned this ability that it's not always a hammer and nail situation. There's, you know, different tools for different situations.
Yeah, it's interesting to me the message of the episode. I mean, on one level, I mean, the lessons Picard learned is sometimes you have to get into a fight, and also sometimes you have to not sleep with the girl. And I'm not sure.
Kirk could not really learn that lesson.
He didn't learn either of those lessons. Well, he learned the first one pretty well. But how does that square with you guys as far as life lessons? I guess what I'm trying to say is, what is the overall thing Picard learned? Was it just don't regret things? The past makes you what you are? Or is it more specific? Is it more about these actual actions that he did or didn't take?
I think what Q was trying to get Picard to realize was that we are all the way we are for a reason. And our actions, whether we regret them or not, are important into shaping who we are. You know, we've been talking about first impressions on Picard. Yeah, if he weren't such an arrogant ass to start with, you know, chances are we might not have the same Picard that we do today. This was the Picard we see on TNG, he has learned from all these experiences. His life has shaped him, and he became a diplomat over time, is the impression that I've had. He's not a gung-ho, let's just kick butt the whole time type like Kirk. He's much more reserved. He's much more, you know, think before you open your mouth type of person. Very, very reserved, and, you know, for him, that works for him. He's better off for it. So I think that is what he needed to realize.
I think for me, I think the theme of the episode, somebody recently used a metaphor about, you know, life and us living our lives that I felt made a lot of sense, in the sense that they describe life as being a mosaic. You know, you kind of go through your life and you gather all of these tiles, you know, these experiences or these moments, these relationships, skills, whatever. And you don't necessarily, as you're going along picking them up, understand what the big picture is going to be or see what the big picture is going to be. But you get to the end of your life, and hopefully you've built something, you know, pretty out of it. And that's kind of the idea. And I felt like that was a very similar theme being mm-hmm. expressed in this episode. It's like, okay, here's a handful of tiles that Picard maybe wished he could have gotten rid of. But if he did toss those out and replace them with something else, it would screw up the big picture. And it's the big picture of who he was wouldn't work anymore. That metaphor has kind of been very clear, or helped me understand it clearly. And I think it ties into Tapestry very well.
Yeah, I do think that things happen in life for a reason, even if we don't understand why at the time. Things do come full circle. And it's very important that everything does happen the way it does. If that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's the point, yeah.
On the other hand, I mean, there are definitely... You could take it the wrong way, because there are definitely experiences I know in my life, and probably everybody else's life too, where you go, no, that was definitely a mistake. I shouldn't have done that, and things would be better if they went the other way. So you could... There is a possibility for misinterpreting, you know, the theme of like, oh, any crappy thing that has ever happened to you, well, treasure and value it, because
right.
otherwise you'd be Lieutenant Junior Grade that was punctual. It's like, well, not really. I mean, most of the things people regret in life, I would venture to say, are probably worthwhile to regret. But therein, yeah. I think, lies the value of those experiences in the sense that, okay, well, I made a mistake here. The best I can make out of that situation is to remember it so I don't make the same mistake in the future.
Exactly. The important thing is to learn from it, not repeat it.
So I feel like that's not quite the theme of this episode itself, but that's also a worthwhile theme for a different story. I mean, they both have value. They're both worthwhile lessons for people to consider and to live their lives knowing about. But I think there is a possibility for a little misinterpretation there, going, oh, man, I shouldn't have got that girl pregnant at 16. Oh, but if I didn't, then I wouldn't be captain of a starship. Well, no, not really. This doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, there might be some dissonance there.
Yeah, there's some exceptions to that rule.
As I recall, I don't think Kirk was ever on an episode of 16 and Pregnant or anything like that, was he?
But you know he's got Space Kirk's, baby Kirk's running around gallivanting across the galaxy. You just know
it. Yeah, where are the mothers wanting child support? That's what I never understood.
Well, no,
is this
money
not
in the
happened
future.
In the 23rd century? Well,
there's no money. What is he going to give them? There's no money in the future.
That's what you call the Kirk loophole.
Lucky for him.
I can't pay you child support because money doesn't exist. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Don't tell me you don't have any alimony for me. Well, I don't.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. When the alimony comes back, and the alimony probe is looking for the money, and then they say, let me guess, you don't use money in the future. And he says, well, we don't.
Well, we don't.
And so the probe says...
And that's all he's got to say. And so then they have to move on.
Yeah. Then the probe leaves and goes off to find out wherever Riker's last leave was. And then...
Just as hopeless of a pursuit.
Yeah, pretty much.
I guess so.
But I was going to say that this is kind of, if you look at it one way, it's the opposite of the lesson that I think Crusher, or I guess Wesley, learned in The First Duty, that the episode was the sort of proto Paris, proto Ensign Paris in it. But I mean, maybe it's sort of telling the same story. Here's my question. Would Wesley have been better off living through the experience and regretting it, or going back and changing it? Like, what I always got out of that episode is, well, Wesley should have never gotten himself into that in the first place. But what this episode is sort of postulating it is, no, Wesley's better off because now he had this negative experience that he's learned from.
He made a mistake, but he's hopefully learned from it. It's a good question. I mean, let's do a thought experiment and imagine that Wesley gets his own Tapestry episode 20, 30 years from now. Q or whoever comes back and offers him the chance not to do this, and he takes it, and then, okay, he turns out not to be the captain that he would have been in the future. But then there's the added moral dimension in the sense that Wesley killed a kid. Picard didn't kill anybody, he didn't hurt anybody but himself, but Wesley and his teammates got a kid killed. So where does the moral heft, you know, lie in that situation? Is that an unforgivable mistake? Is that a mistake that's it's not worth making to learn from? I've heard, I mean, parents have the philosophy that, you know, that their job is to allow their kids to make the mistakes that they will be able to learn from, but to prevent them from making big enough mistakes that ruin their lives. So it's like, okay, if you want to go out and blow, you know, the $100 from your job on sneakers or whatever, that's fine. That's a mistake, or if you consider it to be, that's a mistake to make, and hopefully you'll learn from it. But not to spend that $100 on meth, which will ruin your life. It's like that's the distinction. And so
what you're saying is, not only is Beverly Crusher a really bad doctor, she's also a terrible parent.
I don't get where all this Crusher Doctor hate is coming from.
Dork Trek.
Yes, Dork Trek.
All right. I mean, you guys, before the show, you were saying how Pulaski's a better doctor, but I haven't watched a Pulaski episode in years, so I couldn't speak to that, but...
Said is that we don't like Pulaski and we do like Crusher, but
yeah.
We think Pulaski is a better medical doctor than Dr. Crusher is. And my question was, would this whole episode been a lot shorter if it had been a second season episode and Pulaski had been the one in sickbay when they came back from that mission? Because she would have saved Picard and then this whole Q thing would have never been necessary in the first place.
Right. Yeah. She would have revived him end of episode.
Yeah.
And then insulted him. It would have been like those...
Yeah, it would have been like those YouTube videos where it's like such and such in 5 seconds.
Yes.
Picard goes down. Pulaski takes a hypospray. Roll credits.
Well, they would have had to spend the next 40 minutes on Spot's new cat food. So
that's right.
Oh, that's true. That might have been good.
And Tapestry would have referred to all the flavors that had been mixed into the food.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, Data creates the most perfect feline supplement, you know, the balance of like tuna and some shrimps, a little bit of chicken flavor, whatever Spot is into. Yeah. He makes the perfect food, tries to market it over at Quark's Bar, even though we didn't really know much about Quark's Bar at this time. Data launches a new career as a cat food salesman.
It didn't tell anybody that it was cat food either. And that's a feline supplement number 94. Yeah,
he serves as a pate, as samples.
Oh, gosh.
Here, try this. It's great.
Can we talk for a second about how, 400 years in the future, we're still using what looks like a pretty lousy artificial heart? Like, we're working on stem cells right now. And, okay, even discounting science that has come along since this episode has been produced, they have transporters, which take a complete image of every atom in your body, and they have replicators, which can turn energy into matter. Pull up a new heart for him, and then beam it in. Like, why does Picard, 400 years in the future, need this thing that looks like it's made out of vacuum tubes?
Well, to tell you, when of course this stuff's all in SD, so the image quality's not very good. And when Q held it up when Q holds that up and he says, "You died because of this," at first I thought he was holding up a grenade or the weapon that those aliens use to shoot Picard.
Right.
And then I realized, no wait, that's Picard's artificial heart.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why. I do have this idea for a movie where, sort of like that movie Crank, where he sort of has to, you know, jolt himself with energy. Picard has to be jolting himself with electricity, you know, every 5 minutes to keep going.
He's like that obsolete robot from Futurama with the water wheel. And every time he just slow down, he freaks out. Oh god, I'm gonna die.
Or maybe the artificial heart is like with Tony Stark, where he has the thing in his chest at all times. It's keeping him from dying, but it's also giving him superpowers.
That's where his super maturity comes from the artificial heart.
Yes.
I was actually thinking maybe he gives Q a run for his money.
Yeah, maybe he could.
Yeah, like we're talking superpowers. Not omnipotency, but maybe make Q a little nervous.
All right. Well, Shar, I understand that you are fading away as apparently you are setting right all the mistakes that you made or avoided so that you can return to your proper timeline here. But before you completely fade away back into your own reality, we do have to talk about the one topic that falls under your true area of expertise as the Trek FM sex and relationship expert. And that
yes, of course.
We do need to talk about Picard's sexual report card.
Yeah. Okay. Let's tackle this. Yes.
I mean, essentially, you've got this girl, Marta, who's been Picard's friend for years and has just been imagining, I'm not going to speak for anyone else on this panel, but I imagine there are people out there who imagine sex with Picard. So that's what Marta's been doing for the past few years. And then she has sex with him. Charlene, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think Marta gave Picard?
What is that?
Based on her reaction the morning after.
Oh, boy.
Based on her reaction.
On her reaction. Okay.
You know, I'm honestly thinking, I mean, this is a long time since I've seen this episode, but I'm just going to throw out a 5.5.
Yeah.
A 5.5.
Yeah, somewhere around there. I mean, that might be generous.
It really might be. I might need to rewatch this episode and lower it, but definitely not all that she was hoping for.
I don't think so, because Greg, you had an explanation for this, though, in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Well, yeah, I thought, yeah. I mean, possibly, you know, he looks like his 30-year-old self, but he has the libido of his 60-year-old self, unfortunately.
Maybe so. And then this is also where Kirk excels, and Picard probably dropped off the radar a little bit.
That's true.
Now, see.
Yeah, once you kind of get in.
Yeah, Picard isn't really in practice. That's the other problem.
Well, that's just it. Once you kind of get on that diplomatic track, you know, you really lose your swagger with the ladies.
Is that like an RPG? You sort of have the different routes you can go down, and Picard is spending all the skill points on diplomacy.
Right, but then you lose everything in your sexual persuasion powers with the ladies. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something like that.
Now, see, I don't know about any of that, but it strikes me that I feel like Picard is probably a very generous lover. He just seems like that. I tend to get that vibe. So I really can't find any other explanation other than not having a very powerful warp core. You know, perhaps the warp core is only a few decks tall.
So you're thinking that maybe they put the short dilithium sticks in instead of the long ones?
Yeah, I mean, they're just maybe out of alignment a little bit.
Maybe
he left the parking brake on.
But again, it's the enlightened future. So, you know, I guess people shouldn't care, but maybe we're getting a little bit of a dystopian aspect here where it's the enlightened future and nobody should care about that sort of thing anymore, but they really kind of do.
But you're saying that in the 24th century, the warp factor still matters.
Yeah, you know, it's not so much what you have as how you're using it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, it's not the size of the starship that counts, but you can't cross the galaxy in a runabout. Just going to say.
Yeah.
True. Well, and then consider that Picard now has the galaxy-class starship. So does that make up for a little lacking of something else? You know, kind of like the guy in the brand-new convertible sort of thing?
I think that's true. Yeah, I mean, that's when he met Vosh. He had that galaxy class swagger going on, but put him back as an ensign, put him in that Wrath of Khan uniform. He just doesn't have much to back it up with.
And his previous starship did have 4 nacelles. I'm just going to throw that one out there.
Again, he's making up for something.
That's true. Yeah, I thought you were going to say he was compensating. You know, the galaxy class starship's really big. Now, Riker, when he became a captain, he got the Titan. That's a rather small ship. So he doesn't feel like he needs to compensate for anything.
Well, he did get married to Troi, and so he doesn't have a whole lot to prove anymore, correct?
Exactly.
That's true.
Riker essentially won. And he's good.
I wouldn't be surprised if they had an open relationship.
At least
swinging in zaddies, huh?
Well, their weddings are naked. I mean, come on.
This is true.
What kind of culture produces that ceremony?
Did they ever get to the naked wedding? I know they had to do Nemesis instead of the naked wedding, which I think most people would rather see in that film. Did they ever actually get back to Beta Zed?
I have no idea. I mean, I guess
I don't know.
I know that Worf was working out in preparation.
Yeah, he was.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, of course, Lwaxana already saw Worf naked.
Yeah. That's true. I think that Wesley
they
probably
had a mud bath.
They did.
I think, I still don't want to talk about the whole idea of...
We just broke Chris.
I think we're getting a little too deep into the wormhole, if you know what I mean.
I'm pretty sure that Wesley invited Ensign Leffler to the wedding, however. So
very true.
Probably
all right.
So.
Well, we're going to let you completely fade back into your own reality there, Char. So before you go, though, any final thoughts that you want to share with us about a Tapestry, and then we'll go ahead and finish our discussion.
All right. I just kind of want to sum it up by saying I really like this episode. It is a favorite of mine. I always watch it when I'm doing kind of a TNG retrospective or what have you. I do not skip it. It is one of my favorite Q episodes. It's one of my favorite Picard episodes. Incredibly well done, incredibly well written. pretty hard to go wrong. And so I like this one a lot. And so I'll keep it short and simple because I am fading away.
All right. Well, thanks for hopping on with us and talking about Tapestry. And of course,
well, thanks for having me.
Everyone can find you every week on the Delta Quadrant, and we'll have the usual links in the show notes and everything to that. So
We're still kicking it over on the Delta Quadrant. We are going to take a week of shore leave, though. So after this week's material comes out, if we fall off the face of the earth for a little while, don't be alarmed. We're just on Risa.
Okay. And
or the Delta Quadrant equivalent of Risa, wherever that may be.
Yeah, probably more like the holodeck.
Right.
Well, okay.
Or maybe.
But I know.
Maybe it's that planet where even Harry can't get laid, even though the girls there want him.
That's, right, the one where the girl planet. Is throwing herself on him and he still says no.
Yes, that one, yes.
Yeah, well, they're the pleasure people.
The pleasure people, yes.
Yeah, everything they want, they seek pleasure. All they want is pleasure. All they feel is pleasure. And then they've got like fish wire or whatever it was hanging, you know, sticking around their heads. It was a great makeup job they did there for that one. But Harry couldn't even get laid there. So, you know, and I'm not sure about PDP.
He couldn't even get laid on the horror planet.
Yeah. I'm not sure if PDP did that badly for himself, but PDH, man.
Yeah.
Oh, never. The wonders never cease.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Well, I hope everything goes well in back in your future reality, your proper timeline.
We shall see.
So until next time.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Have a good night.
All right. Well, Brian, how about you? We're approaching an hour. By the time we wrap up, we'll hit an hour. So, do you have any other topics or final thoughts about Tapestry?
It is definitely one of my favorites. I hadn't actually watched it in a while, but it's one of my favorites. I think it's one of the clearest. It has one of the clearest themes. I think as a storyteller, I think it's incredibly important to know why you're telling a story and have a real clear thematic idea of why you're going through the trouble of telling the story in the first place. And sometimes, quite often, that doesn't happen in television because you just need an hour of television and you gotta make it and go. So quite often you don't really have that. But I think this is one of the best examples of having a clear thematic idea and really expressing it well. And I think it's a great use of Q. Like I said earlier, it's a great use because Q is the right tool to use in this scenario, and you're not just using him for the sake of using him. And we get to see Picard. It's always a weird geeky thing to see a cast member in a different colored uniform than they normally are, which is a weird, stupid geeky thrill. But we get that, and it's definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah, and it's also bringing back the Wrath of Khan uniform. You know, putting that on TV, we haven't really seen that. In quite a long time at this point.
We see that a bunch of times in
like here and there, but it's good to see our actual one of our cast members wearing it, Frasier or something.
Crusher's dad or something, or Wesley's dad.
You say that you like him in a different colored uniform. I cannot stand that teal color.
No,
this one's not as teal as it became, though, is it? This one's still kind of during the transitional period.
This is the transition teal. This isn't the DS9 really awful teal, but it's still not that nice blue that they had at the beginning. I mean, you look at what Dr. Salar wore and what Crusher still wears through this episode, and it's a much nicer, deeper blue. I just can't get behind it. And seeing Picard in it, I mean, sure, he's PDP, but it just looks dumb.
He does. Did you see the Photoshop recently? Somebody took a picture of the original series bridge crew in the Wrath of Khan style uniforms, but then Photoshopped it so they had the original series department colors on them.
Oh, that'd be cool.
It's a good idea.
It didn't.
Does not work.
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Okay.
No.
I think it's the blue is like, it's almost there, but I think it's a little too much of this teal. And it's like, oh, if you guys went a little darker, that could work. But and then the red is fine. Obviously, the red is what was, they just used the actual red. But the gold, the yellow, not so much.
No.
Yeah, I don't know why they're always trying to get, or they seem to always be trying to get away from the solid color that we had in the original series. And then we started doing it, or we did it in TNG, but then we get into DS9 and it's now just a strip of color along the shoulders. Mm-hmm. And then we get into First Contact and now it's just an undershirt under a more uniform thing. I'd expect the next show would, it would just be like little dots on the shoulder or
little
something.
Little epaulets or something, yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
only their socks. They have colored socks. That's it.
Different colored socks. So you can tell, you know, when Riker puts his leg up next to the yes. next to somebody, you can tell what department
yes,
he's in.
Yes, the red, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, they're just, that's one thing I do like about the JJ films, just bring back those bright colors.
The thing is that...
Well, it makes sense, because, I mean, they only did that in the original series because color television was this new big hot deal, and yeah,
that's true.
And not everybody had a color television, so it was like, you spent the money to have a color television, you wanted to feel like you got your money's worth. So, as obviously, that is not as big of a deal anymore, that kind of production yeah. design takes a back seat. Which, I think it's more realistic anyway. I think that is one of the more cartoony, pajama-y aspects to it. And if, you know, if you look at real military uniforms, when they do have color, it's as a highlight. And you have, you know, well, everybody wears black or khaki or blue or whatever.
That's what I was going to say. Can you imagine in World War II, they're storming the beach at Normandy and they're running on and all the medical officers have blue jackets on and the commanders have red jackets on. I mean, I as a fan, yes. And I like in the JJ movie that they went back to the colors and I think it looks great and it's what I want to see for TOS. But realistically, I think the best uniforms are the DS9 later season / First Contact uniforms. With the black and the gray and only the color and the shirt, because they're in a war. There's a threat from the Borg in First Contact, and then they're in a war with the Dominion. You don't want to draw so much attention to yourself with all these brightly colored things. So I do think it's more realistic, and it actually helps me to feel... It helps pull me more into the reality of what's going on there.
I agree.
Personally, so...
I can see that.
Yeah.
I do like that they bring back something around the cuff in those
yeah,
uniforms.
I like that, yeah.
That they had that in the TOS uniforms.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, are those your final thoughts on the episode, Greg?
I mean, that's pretty much it. I watched the episode. I just look at the uniforms, and I just ignore the whole rest of it. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much down to it. I guess my last comment would be about, I love the scene with Riker and Troy and Lieutenant Junior Grade Picard, mm-hmm. where he is just... sort of forcing them into doing a performance evaluation.
Yes.
They're in 10 forward and they're so uncomfortable and they just don't want to be talking to this guy who's obviously way too old to still be a lieutenant. And you just know they've thought about it too. Like every performance evaluation, Riker's like, I want to give this guy a promotion, but he just doesn't deserve it whatsoever. He's done nothing and it's painful. And here's this guy, and he's interrupting their drinks to force them to say what they don't like about him.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And I thought that Frakes and Surtees did a really good job in that scene, too, because mm-hmm. remember, for 6 years, they've been playing with Patrick Stewart as the captain.
Yeah.
And to be able to switch it around like that and just really treat him like he's just this anonymous crew member who's punctual but otherwise uninspiring,
which
I don't know, I thought it was good.
Can we talk for a second about, well, okay, sure, you need people that, you know, take risks and whatnot in life, but what's wrong with just being the guy that, you know, does his work, gets it in on time, and, you know,
yeah.
not everybody has to be Captain Kirk or Picard. It's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Data's a lieutenant commander, and he's pretty much just punctual and an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially like, until TNG really gets going, that's essentially all he is.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I see where the story is coming from, but it's almost like, you know, well, not everybody in any universe can be Captain Kirk. So are they, with every performance review, are they telling, because, you know, you see extras that, you know, wearing the blue shirts walking in the hallway that do look like Picard's age and they're only ensigns mm-hmm. or lieutenant junior grades or whatever. For those guys, when they get their performance reviews, are they getting the same kind of, you know, well, you're pretty good, I guess, but you're yeah. just you're not saving the ship enough weeks in a row. And I'm sorry, it's just not, you know.
Your not... barrel roll quotient is just a little too low.
Yeah, you're keeping the ship from blowing up or saving it from an alien takeover per week quota is just too low. I'm sorry.
Look at Reginald. Look at Reg Barkley. He's saved the ship three times last week, and he's still kind of mediocre. Yeah. What have you done?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of always figured that when we saw one of those old guys who's an ensign, that he was maybe like a chef or a surgeon who late in life was like, yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, I could buy a space Corvette, or I could join Starfleet. And so we just went ahead and went to Starfleet, but he can't advance. The idea of somebody going into the academy, like out of college, making that be their college, and then still being Lieutenant Junior Grade, I think it's unrealistic. And I think it's Q sort of exaggerating the point just to get it across to Picard how lame he was.
Yeah, I think that if you're an average officer, by that time, you would be a commander. I think for a lot of people, they hit commander and then they stop. Like, they never get that promotion to captain.
I might say lieutenant commander.
Well, even Beverly Crusher's a commander.
That's true.
But she's not a line officer. See, there's a difference.
But she did take the command test, and she is certified to take command.
Eventually, yes. Yeah. But there's a distinction, and that's the same test that Crusher makes, or Troy takes. There's a distinction in the real military.
And we know how that turned out.
Yeah.
I think it's echoed in
Starfleet. And that there's a difference between a line officer and a support officer. A line officer is somebody who is going through the command ranks. And a support officer is somebody like a doctor or a priest or a lawyer that even though they can get promoted to captain, they will never be within the chain of command to actually command anything.
Sure.
And so, yeah.
Yeah. But, well, like McCoy becomes an admiral eventually.
Yeah, but he would never actually get a command of a ship. But then Crusher does get command of the Pester.
In an alternate timeline. But that's only because she slept with Picard to get it.
Yeah,
and she even married him.
Because she was the only one willing to, apparently.
Right, there you go.
All right, well, let's see. My final thoughts on it are, I really like the opening. Going back to the very beginning of our discussion, is this the afterlife? Because Star Trek had steered clear of religion so much, I thought it was very interesting how this episode starts and they're really showing you like this is heaven and there's someone in the white robes and it's kind of like, oh, Picard's died and he's in heaven, and is Star Trek saying that when you die you go to heaven and it's white clouds and they're like little so I thought, you know, but then quickly he steps out and you find, oh, it's Q, okay, this is a Q thing going on. Otherwise, yeah, I mean, I love the episode. I always like seeing what the characters might have been like when they were younger. And of course, the idea of the decisions that you make in life and where they lead you. And, you know, because I think many people, you look back in your life and you see all the decisions that you made and what path your life followed after that. And you can imagine what path your life might have followed if you had made a different decision. So it's a very interesting concept. And like you said, Brian, you know, it's a perfect use of Q. I do like the fun Q episodes. Most of them, I enjoy them. But this is when I really
I don't want to completely malign them.
Yeah,
sure.
Cupid's fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't go that far, but they can be fun.
Cupid is fantastic. I would go that far. I really enjoy it. However silly and over the top it is, I enjoy that. But this as a different side of Q,
yes.
I enjoy it. For different reasons.
The Next Generation humorous Q episodes are very fun and they're very funny. But I definitely prefer Q in something like this or in All Good Things, where he's really putting Picard to the test. And when he's putting humanity on trial, especially the one in All Good Things, because the message that he has there, I think, is a really great message versus Encounter at Farpoint, where it was more like, haha, we're better than you. Kind of, we're omnipotent aliens, kind of thing. But yeah, so Tapestry is one of my favorite TNG episodes. And and there's no family member coming on board. We haven't gotten to season
exactly.
7 yet. So, all right. Well, Brian, thanks for joining us today to talk about Tapestry.
No problem. Love to be here.
Tell everyone where they can find you around the interwebs.
You can find me on Twitter at Brian Finifter, B-R-I-A-N-F-I-N-I-F-T-E-R. And I'm also on a podcast called Down in Front, which you can find at downinfront.net, all one word. When we started, we did our own commentaries to movies, and we still do that on occasion, but we now more often kind of have more normal traditional conversations about movies. Myself and my three co-hosts, we all work in the industry in various capacities, so it's kind of a people who work in the industry but still love movies and are geeks about movies, talk about movies kind of a thing. I think our last release was a commentary for Cowboys and Aliens, and so you check that out, and you can find us at downinfront.net, like I said.
Awesome. All right, we'll have links to all that in the show notes. Okay, great. Well, hope to have you on again soon, Brian.
Oh, always good to be here.
Well, I have been trying to do Trapestry for quite some time, mainly so we could play that Jonathan Coulton song, Artificial Heart, as we get into the feature. So I do hope that will be in the final episode.
Yes, I like the way that you chose the episode simply so that you could play a song.
Well, that's just how it goes. The one thing I did want to mention, it is too bad that this wasn't the movie Star Trek Generations, because what Picard really needed was, he needed to not convince his friend not to fight the Nausicaans. He needed James T. Kirk to team up with him to fight the Nausicaans.
Oh.
Just take him head on, fisticuff, you know, mano a mano in the bar, teach him a lesson. And then, I mean, then, you know, flash forward, you know, Picard's an admiral. I don't know, he's Federation president. That's where he really needed to go with this.
But the bar would have been run by Guinan, and it would have been very dark, and there would have been like 10,000 candles all over the place. And then they walk in.
That's true.
And the Nausicaans say, "Fight, human! Human, fight!"
Yes, and we'd be spinning around. There'd be lens flares and spinning around and lens flares and spinning around.
Suddenly, Picard is blindfolded. Kirk is blindfolded. The Nausicaans are blindfolded.
Well, that's... We weren't going to talk about the night that Picard spent with Marta.
That's true. Yeah, we didn't talk very much about Marta's reaction the next day, did we?
We got to it a little bit. I mean, I definitely got that grade from Charlene that we were looking for. Yeah, Marta just seemed really, really disappointed. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the greatest, but I've never gotten the reaction of, "We've been friends for a long time and we slept together once. I never want to see you again."
Yeah.
I mean, that's painful.
I was pretty surprised by that too. Like, what?
I mean, usually when that sort of thing is, it's like, okay, we ruined the friendship and we like figure that out over time. It's never like the next day we like have breakfast. And it's like, yeah, no, sorry.
He's like, "Why don't we just forget about what happened last night?" And Marta says, "I don't know if I can. I mean, it was so bad. It's burned
really,
into my
really
brain.
Bad,
I can never
Johnny.
Forget how bad that was, Johnny." Yeah, it's about like that. All right.
So, yeah, I do feel bad for him.
All right. Well, Craig, let's tell everyone where they can find us if they want to share their thoughts on Tapestry or anything else we talked about today. And you can go to trek.fm/contact. That's where you'll find our form, and you can send us a text message or email, which will come to us as an email through that page. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm, on Google+ at hyperchannel/trekfmg+, and you'll find us on Twitter, where we're always talking about Star Trek, and that is, of course, username trekfm, keeping it very simple for you. Now, Greg, how about your Twitter name? Is it also simple?
It's pretty simple. It's just my name, Greg Harbin, and you can go there. And actually, I've been doing quite a bit of Trek tweeting as of late. Chris, you may not have been awake, but people who were awake and were there for the gloriousness of the Spock's brain live tweeting, I don't think that anything will ever be the same. Brain and brain, what is brain? And other classic tweets.
That's right.
Just yeah, you kind of had to be there.
I think
but
I think I was asleep at that time. Again, listeners, not because I sleep through the day, but because Greg and I are 17 hours apart in time zones, as I'm in Tokyo and he's in Seattle. But I did go back and read your timeline.
I
liked the use of all caps and the liberal use of blank lines through there as well.
Because that's what people really like. They like blank lines. They like to see one tweet take up half of their, you know, half of the screen on TweetDeck.
Right. And then after that, I believe maybe the next day you went on and you live tweeted, and the children shall lead, I believe. Again,
yes. But whereas with Spock's brain, it was just... almost every other line was quotable, and I was just hopping in there just trying to figure out what the best part of it was. And the children will lead. I was kind of in pain. I kind of felt like one of those kids was in the room, you know, pounding their fist and just causing a constant headache. I think I got maybe two tweets out in that live tweet.
Yeah, but your favorite part was the fist pumping, right? When the kid starts fist pumping.
The fist pumping. Yeah. Yes. It's when all the kids are fist pumping together. And actually, my favorite part is when, is it the Gorgon? The something or another where Kirk knows what he's called for absolutely no reason.
Right.
He appears and there's that weird green effect over him. But every time the actor moves, they don't really move the green effect. Yeah. It's sort of in the same place.
Yeah.
But you can tell the actor, well, I should put actors in quotes. It was some lawyer, well-known guy, well-known lawyer at the time. And I think his kid was like the freckled kid.
Yeah.
Anyway, the actor, he was like trying not to move as well, but he still did move slightly. And the little green effect just didn't follow. Wow, such a bad... I don't think I'd ever actually sat down and watched Spock's Brain or And the Children Shall Lead. And I am forever scarred.
Yeah.
But that did spur me to the next Twitter account that I do want to mention. I've started with our new TOS editor, 005, Drew Stewart, TOS Season 4. So you can find that TOS _ Season 4. That's the numeral 4. And yeah, we'll be doing a tweet or two a day. Basically, my plan is all of the fun of TOS Season 3 with all of the family drama of TNG season 7, all in one tidy package.
That's right. So this is inspired by the very famous TNG season 8.
Yes.
So these are plots from the unfilmed, unaired 4th season of the original series. Now, can you give me an example of one of the plots?
Yes, I can. So, for instance, one that I tweeted this morning. On a way mission, Kirk discovers Planet of Gods, who worship mortal men. Nurse Chapel shows old animated films to the crew.
I love those B plots in there. So
yes, the B plots are very important. Another one with a great B plot was Chekhov's mother is discovered on a Talosian sleeper ship. She's been de-aged to 15. Sulu thinks anyone cares about his long lost first cousin.
And there's that tie-in again. I love there that you do have all of that family drama of Season 7 Next Generation.
The family drama is important for TOS Season 4 because, you know, they'd explored so many... It's sort of like TNG, you know, by Season 6, they'd done every theoretical plot. So they had to delve into everyone's family drama. So that's basically what ends up happening with TOS as well.
All right. Well, so follow Greg at Greg Harbin on Twitter and follow TOS Season 4. And get these plots and stay up to date on Trek. And you can follow me as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with a Y. And I'm tweeting about random things. Japan. it's not college football season right now, but we're getting close. So the football tweets may start up soon if you like college football. And of course, Trek FM for all of the Star Trek information. And visit our site for our other shows. We have Hyperchannel, hosted by Tristan. We have Trek News and Views, hosted by Colin. We've got all kinds of articles from Charlene on Voyager, Drew on original series, everyone else. All kinds of Star Trek stuff for you on the site at trek.fm. And all right, Greg, well, I'm going to head off. I have to finish my astrophysics report because Jordy is getting a little bit antsy down there in engineering.
All right, Chris, I think it's time to stick a dumb jot cue in it, because the Ready Room is done.